Hello, everyone, and welcome to the One Board Podcast. I am Rick White, and with me, as always, is a man as snuggly as a teddy bear, but with the bite force of a grizzly bear, Ryan Gutowski. How are you, sir?
I've actually got a business card that says that. It's I hate it because when I hand out that business card, I've had people look at me in the eyes like deadpan look and say, let's see it.
Yeah. And by that, I mean the snuggliness.
Yeah, I just have to leave.
Yeah.
Becomes really uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's a really long business card, too.
It is. It's double-sided.
Yes. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm feeling much better. I was sick last week, but I'm feeling much better, and I got some game time, which was fun. And our family broke down this weekend and purchased a Switch, so we're playing some Mario Kart in between our board games. So,
okay. Are you winning?
Yes. No, I think my son beat me this last time. We played some four-player, and Josiah whipped me. So,
Mario Kart is a solid family staple.
It really is. And that's part of the reason. Like, they were having a sale on it this past week for Mario Week or whatever. And so, it was good. It was worth it. And it's a good family device, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, in between games of Mario Kart, Ryan, what have you been playing?
So, today, I finally took time to sit down and play Verdorn Gardens. And this is a game from City of Kings. And they are... this game is very, very cute on the front cover. I mean, it's got some kind of, like, fox... dog-looking thing on the front
fox dog.
Cover. Fox dog.
They're always in my yard.
Yeah, but it is a cute-looking game and very deceptive because the basic mechanics play a little bit like Honshu. Do you remember Honshu?
Bless you.
Honshu.
Gesundheit.
Honshu is a game. Honshu is a game. I think Renegade put Honshu out. But Honshu is this city building game that I really love. There are these 3x2 tiles, cards, and they have these little tile squares, and you're basically laying them out and trying to connect things, and you can overlap or underlap. Well, Verdorn Gardens has this mechanic where you're exploring these gardens, and you're exploring three different types. You're exploring soil or dirt, you're exploring water, and you're exploring the gardens. And so you've got these different things that you're looking for. I don't know. The scoring is really creative. I think that the mechanics of the game work really well, but it's a lot harder than I anticipated. With the cuteness of the box and then the really nice tiles and stuff like that, and the components look so nice, and then I open it up and I'm like, man, this is really, like, it burns your brain just a little. It really makes you think every move, and you're like, if I'm not 2-3 steps ahead, somebody's going to take me out and take the things that
I need.
How
does it? How would you like compare it to Honshu? Like, where are some differences at?
Honshu, you're able to lay underneath and above and kind of cover up different areas of your different cards. With one exception, you can't cover up a water tile. With Verdorn Gardens, you have a couple different placement, your basic placement, you can only lay it to, the way this is different, you have, is it 9 squares on a card? They're square cards. It looks like 9 squares on a card. And so you can only cover up that last column. You can cover up, but you also have a height restriction, similar to something like King Domino. And so you've got a height restriction of 5 squares high. So you're always butting up against the height restriction, and then you have drafting restrictions. Each season brings a different drafting restriction. There's a lot going on in the game, and I'm really surprised that it says 8+. This is definitely like a 12 to 14 year old. I played against a guy who is very much a gamer, loves gaming, plays a lot of games, thinks critically, loves strategy, and he was struggling with it. You know,
cute box art definitely does not suggest that. You're
not at all
right.
But
and to be fair, when you first said it, I thought you said Fedora Gardens, and so I was expecting a bunch of hats to be growing out of the ground. Yeah. But this is not that.
Fedora Gardens is actually where I took my dad on vacation. Because he's retired, he's really into fedoras, and so we go to the fedora gardens. You get to pick them; they allow you to pick them right off the tree that they grow fedoras on.
Wait until they're ripe, or else they're too small for your head.
Oh, too small for your head. That's how you get those double XL fedoras, the ones for the fat heads like myself. You got to wait till they're just right, you know. So,
or else they'll go rotten and turn into Indiana Jones hat.
Well, they can't turn into kangos. That's how you get a Kango. So anyway,
tell me about what you've been playing, man. You know, it's something that people should check out especially if they liked Honshu, but definitely don't think, oh, just because there's a cute fox looking thing that you need to pick it up for your kids.
Yeah, definitely. This is not a kid's game. I'm going to introduce my kids to it, but I think it might be over their head a little, especially like trying to score out. Like, there are so many ways that you can gather points, but I'm not even sure. We played it twice this morning. I'm not even 100% sure which is the best way to get points, you know?
Well, but I think if you get Emily to get like a squishy or some sort of stuffed animal that looks like this cover art, I think she'd be happy with it.
Oh, yeah. She'd be fine with it. She'd play it. So.
Well, Ryan, in a completely opposite direction that I don't have a good segue for, I've had a game on my shelf for 3 years now called Unexploded Cow. And I bought this game because the name Unexploded Cow is a fantastic name for a game. And it is a game about taking mad cows that have mad cow disease over to France to blow up landmines that are still buried there from World War II.
As one does.
Yeah, as one does. This is a game from a publisher whose name we probably don't say on a family podcast, that's talking about a cheap donkey of some sort. It was released a long time ago, and it was actually originally released for free, I believe, but then got its own published version. But yeah, it was released all the way back in 2001. But in the game, you draw cards that have cows on them that you play in front of you to add to your herd, or they have events that allow you to kind of mix things up, maybe get a cow from a discard pile or from another player's herd. But anyway, you draw the cards, you play them, and you pay money to play those cards, and then you roll a die, and then starting from the right side of your herd, you count over until you reach the number on the die. So maybe if I only have 3 cows, I end up going into the herd of the person to my left, and their cow explodes. When their cow explodes, they get money for it, or if it's a negative cow, they lose money for it. And you keep doing that until you have cleared out a city deck, which happens when you blow up your own cows on your turn. And once that happens, you have sudden death, which is the most deadly kind of sudden death, because then you just do bomb rolls and keep blowing up cows until the pot of money runs out, and then whoever's got the most money wins.
Interesting.
It's very simple. I was able to explain the rules. There's a couple of little facets to the rules that are a little more, like some of the cards are special, and those kind of take some learning, but it ended up being, I think, my mother-in-law's favorite game of the weekend. We were at her house for her birthday weekend, and at the, you know, we said last game, you know, what do you want to play? Something new. Do you want to play, you know, this? And she's like, I want to play Unexploded Cow again. So that's the one we broke out. And she destroyed us in the second game. So it's stupid fun. It takes no thinking. There is a lot of luck involved, but if you're taking a game about blowing up cows, seriously, then, I think the problem's with you. So if you're looking for something that might be some quick, silly fun, this would be one. And it is available like on Amazon at $16. And there's some other websites. I don't know that you'll find it at your local game store, unless they have a ridiculous inventory, but yeah, I have had it for 3 years, and I think now it'll be one that gets, brought out more often now that we've actually gotten it to the table.
That's cool. I don't know. I don't know where the line is. I've recently been playtesting a game that I did not care for at all. A game that we're going to have to do a review, preview for. But I don't know where the line is where randomness becomes more okay when it's cute, or the theme is more likable or more in your wheelhouse. I don't know what that line is, because I think that there is a very, very fine line between random gameplay or luck of the draw type situations and being utterly frustrated and it not being a game anymore. You know what I'm saying?
I like that you said utterly frustrated when we're talking about a cow game. Good job on the word choice. I appreciate it.
I was working
for
that.
I think it does. I think it does help, you know, when you know going into it, like, this is a silly game. And if the game has more, if there's less involved in your strategy, like, if I'm planning a strategy and then, like, and this is my problem, like, with Elder Sign, where I can sit and I can plan and I can strategize and then bad dice rolls can completely blow that up. I really don't like that. But if I have spent all of 5 seconds coming up with a strategy for this, which is kind of what you do here, then it doesn't hurt my feelings when it doesn't go well. You know, because, my silly dinky plan didn't work. Oh, well, you know, we still blew up a cow and that's still funny, even though we've done it 47 times. So,
yeah,
I think it was a pretty good one. So I recommend if you like silly fun and you don't have, you know, I think there can be a lack of silliness in some people's board game collections. And I think this is one that you could totally add and it would be good.
So I'm going to talk about Fire in the Library. Rick, you got to talk about Fire in the Library previously. You did the preview for this Kickstarter from Weird Draft Games, and I got my copy probably 2 weeks ago when it shipped out, and we got our copy. Fire in the Library is really good, man. I think I've played it 4 times in the past week, which is good. There's a couple great things going for it. It's this push your luck game where you're drawing cubes out of a bag. I like it because it feels a little bit like Quartz, but it doesn't last as long as Quartz. Quartz, you're sitting down for an hour, you know you're there for an hour, and some people may be really lucky. This game, you can legitimately play it in 20 minutes. You know, if everybody knows the rules, you're playing 15, 20 minutes, and it's fun. It's good. Yeah. My daughter loved it. She wanted to play it again immediately. And so Fire in the Library is really good. We've played it back-to-back times. I taught some guys at work how to play. They really enjoyed it. I really like this one, and it's one that we talked last week about. You can go back to last week's show about things that make you say, oh, that is a good value on Kickstarter. And in my opinion, Fire in the Library was a fantastic value because it's a game that production quality was high. Weird Draft did a fantastic job putting this one together. It's fun. You don't take it too seriously. There are wild swings in the scores. I mean, I think last game we played, somebody just got crazy lucky in one of their last pulls, and I think their final score was 57 while everybody was sub 30, you know, or 35, somewhere around 35 or lower. I mean, they had a really good draw at the end, and then one of the areas of the library burned down because they were being a little reckless. The next player was being reckless, but it was still great. I mean, that 20, 25 minutes that I spent playing it, I didn't look back and be like, crap, that sucked. You know, well, enjoyed it.
I think your comparison to Quartz, and, you know, Quartz was redone as the Snow White gemstone mining game, which we've talked about.
Yeah.
And I think, to me, what makes this game better is, I mean, the mechanics are incredibly similar, as far as you're drawing stuff out of a bag, but the way that things change as time goes by because parts of the library are burning down, and that feels pretty thematic. You know, I know it's, you know, the way in which you wouldn't be competing against each other to save books, but everybody calm down. Also I think the cards work a little bit better. One thing we complained about with the gemstone mining game was that the cards had too much verbiage on them.
Yes.
Like these are simpler, and I think it makes it a lot easier to figure out what you're supposed to do. This is a good game. I was a big fan of it. I put it on my favorite games I played last year list. I'm glad you guys got the chance to check it out because it's a good one.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. So this is one that I think I might do some video content with because I enjoy it so much. So,
Yeah, one that you guys talked about last year that I finally got my hands on was Villainous.
Yeah.
Sarah went out and got this for me for my birthday.
Nice.
When she showed up, we spent my birthday in Spain, And so it kind of threw things off and out of normal. So she actually got it for me this past weekend. And within 24 hours, it was on a gaming table when we were at my in-laws. So we played a 6-player game of that. For those of you that haven't heard about it, it's basically you take on the role of a Disney villain and you are trying to accomplish your particular goal that's relevant to you and before anybody else does. So like mine was Captain Hook, and so my job was to defeat Peter Pan. My father-in-law was Prince John, so his job was to get the most, like, get 20 power, which is kind of like your currency. So it's interesting. You know, each player's got their own little board, and so one thing that's very interesting is that it plays solo, kind of, but also you have to be paying attention to other people to make sure you keep them from doing their thing. I will say that 6 players got a little bit crowded because we were trying to figure out our own thing and how to accomplish our tasks. But my brother-in-law's girlfriend, Katie, was all the way across the table from me, and I had no idea what was going on her board. I could tell what the two people next to me were doing, but like I really didn't know how to play those hero cards against her to try to mess her up because she was so far away. And I didn't really know her rules because each player has a different way that their boards act and a different set of cards and a different way to go about winning the game. And so it adds a cool little like element of I want to play that again. But it does, until you learn their rules, it makes it really hard for you to know how to mess with another person. So I think this is definitely a game that will get better as we keep playing it. I look forward to playing it. And it sounds like there's an expansion that's out, too, for the game. So that could make it even more interesting.
It looks really good. And what I love about it is they're planning on more expansions with this game, mm-hmm. with different villains. I mean, they really have a winner with this this property. I'm really, really excited. Wonderforge is the publisher for this one. They did a great job with it. And what I love is about the win conditions for different people. I'm trying to remember who I played as. I think Emily played as Maleficent. I played as... Kendall played as Prince John, I believe. I'm trying to remember who I played as, but I really like it. It's like Bob played with us a couple months ago and showed us kind of how to play and did a really good job of explaining. Now watch for this, because this is how this person's going to win or could win,
right?
Or watch for that. So I think you're exactly right. The more you play it, the more you are familiar with the other players, how they can play their property that their player the best. I think that makes it hard to teach other people, but it's great for a group of people who game regularly.
I do like that they included tiny little instruction books for each player.
Yes.
I think those were a brilliant idea because they're quick and they explain what you need to do and like some of the things, like I played as Captain Hook and one area of my board was locked and I couldn't really find in the rules what I was supposed to do. But as soon as I opened up my little instruction book, it told me exactly how to unlock that space. And so
that's who I played as.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I liked his a lot. Like I liked the way that his victory condition worked and it felt challenging enough and to where people could mess with it if they wanted to, but also like something that I could accomplish.
No, I think I played as Jafar because that's another one where a part of the board is locked.
Right. Yeah, I think there were the ones that I didn't like. I didn't like the Queen of Hearts because hers felt a little too easy. And my wife was that role and she ended up winning by several turns. And I just felt it was a little too easy, but we might have just not defended it well. And Ursula seemed a little bit confusing. But overall, they seem really cool, and I'm excited about the new takes that the expansions will bring.
That's really cool. Man, definitely glad that you have a copy of Villainous now, because that is a fantastic game. So remember, look in the show notes, because we've got reviews for some of the games that we just talked about in the show notes. So you can go down there, check out the reviews or previews that we have on file over at oneboardfamily.com. If you haven't been over there, we have like 300 and something original written pieces on that website. So
oneboardfamily.com.
So now we are on to the topic of the show. We're going to be talking about how we protect our games, because these things cost some money. So join us on the other side of this break, and we'll be right back.
All right, welcome back. So, Ryan, you know, I kind of, the topic of today's show kind of comes from some experience. So, can I tell you a little story?
Yeah, tell me a story. I love stories.
You like stories? Yeah, okay. So, every Wednesday night, we host families over at our house for our church community group. And one little kid, about 6 years old, loves to come in and play Splat. Do you remember Splat? From like the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, that's
where
the
you
one.
Make the little Play-Doh bugs.
Play-Doh bugs, and then you squash them. Yep, I remember it very
vividly.
Yeah,
I found a copy at a thrift store, and
nice.
I bought it, and he loves it. And so puts it on the table, makes his little splat bugs. That goes okay, but you know, Play-Doh likes to get everywhere.
Yeah, it does.
And you know, it's kind of gets into our tablecloth and gets onto the floor, and the colors all mix up. Now, it's Play-Doh, so, you know, that's kind of expected. But with other things, like we broke out Ice Cool the other day. And, you know, kids that don't, you know, we don't play a lot of games all the time. We played Ice Cool, and they were kind of like leaning on the box as they were trying to take their shots and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, my gosh, no! So that got me thinking, Ryan, like, what is it that we have to do to protect our games? Whenever we've got, especially if we've got a lot of people coming over and playing them that maybe we don't know all that well.
Yeah.
So Ryan, have you had any experience with protecting your games?
I have. I actually have some, not horror stories, but I mean, we play games at lunch at work. We have a pretty decent size, had a pretty decent size gaming group before they moved a whole division to another building. But, our gaming group really grew. And as it grew, people were eating hot wings and, I guess ketchup sandwiches at work, and touching the
Delicious.
Cards with downforce and all that stuff. So some of my, I think some of my games have some wear and tear, an additional level of wear and tear that some of my other games don't because they're lunchtime games. I will tell you that there have been a couple games over the years that I've been like, no, day one, I'm protecting this one. The entire Clank series is one because, and I'll give you the rationale for it. You are handling those cards and you're shuffling those decks so frequently that we sleeve every Clank card. So we've got the Mummy's Curse. We've got, what else do we have? We have, the Clank in Space, we have original Clank, we have the Golden Silk expansion. So every Clank card is sleeved in a nice sleeve because we handle those cards so much. And I want them to stay around because that's an expensive game. And then Cult Express.
Yeah, and I think...
That's another one.
What was your other one? Sorry.
Cult Express.
Yeah.
For the same purpose. You're always handling the cards.
For me, like, I buy used games, and we bought a copy of Alhambra, and they had sleeved all of the money cards.
Really?
And for me, like, they're money cards, and they're going to get handled, but, like, I don't really care if they're a little bit beat up. It's kind of like if you had a deck for Uno. Like, Uno's going to get beat up. That's how it works. So, like, with my Alhambra deck, I'm like, you know, if there's not really all that many times where people are going to be memorizing what cards you have in Alhambra as far as your money. And so it won't be that big of a deal. A bigger deal, though, is a game like Werewolf. Werewolf is One Night Ultimate Werewolf is the only game that I have sleeved, if I'm remembering correctly. And that's because the backs of they're like cardboard, more cardboard cards. But the backs of them, once they start to get beat up a little bit, it's easy to remember, like, oh, that's the werewolf because it's got this, you know, chunk missing out right around the middle. And so it's some of my, you know, more eagle-eyed students are able to notice that. And so I bought sleeves so that those cards can go in there and it's a little bit harder for, you know, you to pick up on which card is which.
That's, I wish I had sleeved my, I mean, Love Letter is a cheap game, so I'm not sleeving it to keep the game in pristine condition, but I've got a copy of Love Letter Adventure Time, which I love, but the wizard card, the Ice King card, has a slight crease in it that I know exactly where it is, and so I have to actively keep myself from cheating, knowing where the Ice King card is. And so that's a little frustrating. I wish I had sleeved that. That's a game that I wish go back in time, sleeve it. It's only a couple sleeves, no big deal. And it keeps it fresh so you don't have to rebuy it. Because I'm going to eventually have to rebuy the game. So another one I wish I had sleeved. We play the Bloody Inn so much that just because of wear and tear, the Bloody Inn, I'm going to have to rebuy that eventually. We love the game so much, and that game has shown that it's been loved on. So,
yeah. So what kind of, I mean, is it mostly like games that you play more that you're going to sleeve, or games where it's really important to keep those cards, you know, secret? Is that kind of your thing?
Yeah. I think that the ones that the cards get handled a lot, like you have to either reshuffle them over and over, or you have to pick them up and lay them down, pick them up, lay them down, and you're going to see the same cards going through your hands all the time. I messed up and didn't sleeve Downforce, and those cards, I mean, it looks like we've owned Downforce for 20 years, just because
it's a throwback game that's now looks throwback.
Exactly. It's now a 2-year old throwback game.
Now featuring ketchup.
Yeah. Actually, it's spaghetti sauce on that one. So that one has spaghetti sauce fingerprint from a coworker. I love that one because the game was like 3 days old when it got that. And I was like, oh my goodness. But it's all good.
So how do you, that's a good point. Like to what extent do you feel like it's okay to lay out the rules and be a little bit like picky about your protecting your stuff? Like, you know, obviously not everybody is paying attention to your stuff. I know we had a guy like maybe it was you or me. I can't remember who it was at this point, but like a person was flossing their teeth with cards, in the middle of a game. And you're like, I'm going to throw up. What are you doing? How do you verbally let people know? And do you let it slide and you just fix it later? Kind of where do you find that balance?
I think inside the house, I think it's more containable. One of the things when we have game nights and stuff, we only have certain items out on the table, near the table, or even in the kitchen. So we played games with some people the other night, and I knew I didn't care so much about the game, and I thought it was okay to have brownies while playing the game. Well, one of the cards has something on it. Not a huge deal because I knew the risk, but it's one of those things that a lot of times when we have a game night, especially with people who may not game very often, what we do is we'll game, and then when we're done with that game, I pack the game up while we snack, eat food, whatever. I think it also keeps me from looking like an absolute psycho. You know, I think that's the that's the big point, is I don't want to look like an absolute psycho, and honestly, I don't want to prioritize things over people. The people at the table are the priority. And so I definitely don't want to get that out of line. But I do try very hard to keep my games looking good, in good condition. I've even thought about, I don't know if you've seen Snakes and Lattes, I think, does this. I saw a little behind the scenes of how they run their board game cafe. And they actually do a Scotchgard coating over some of their boards and stuff like that, especially stuff that is going to get a lot of wear and tear. So if you think about it, if you're playing a lot of, let's say, King of Tokyo, you can actually Scotchgard each of those. They're just little tokens and stuff. So you can Scotchgard those characters and no one would be any the wiser. You know, it's got a matte finish. If somebody dropped, I was the one who did this. We played a friend brought a game over and we played it a couple of years ago. And because of I think it was Quelf. So this was like 10 years ago. We're playing Quelf and somebody knocked over a big glass of tea that I had sitting right next to the board. I was an idiot, put it too close to the board and it got jostled and it went all over the brand new board. You know, and I felt like the worst person. And 10 years later, I still think about that and feel bad about it. You know,
You have nightmares.
Yeah, but if you if you had a little can of Scotch Guard, you could hit some of those games that get played a lot. Just do a quick pass over, and that junk's going to bead up and roll right off, you know?
Right. Well, and I think for me, like, with the kids that are coming repeatedly each week, you know, we had a somewhat difficult night last week, and I was in charge of our kids, and so I told them, I said, look, we're going to have rules that are going to be clearly laid out. I'm thinking like a piece of poster board and have them written out where, like, rule number one, you don't touch a game until you ask Mr. Rick. You know, that way we know what's coming out to the table. And then when we're playing together, like, and part of it, it's just like, I want them, maybe it's weird and maybe I'm doing too much, but I want them to understand like board game etiquette. Like, I'm saying, if you're not doing what Mr. Rick says, you know, three strikes, you're out kind of thing. You don't get to play the game anymore. Yeah. The other thing I'm going to say is, like, no cheating. These kids cheat like it's their job.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Every single game that we play, they cheat. And, you know, that's going to be a thing. And then talking about, you don't get another game until you put up the other one. And part of that's, you know, less protecting your games, but more, like, just having respect for people's stuff.
Yeah.
And trying to teach them that a little bit, but also kind of trying to keep my stuff, you know, to where it'll be able to be enjoyed for many years.
Those guidelines are really good, though, because I think about some of the times where the kids have jumped up from the table after winning a game or whatever. We had a rule for a little while because we started to realize Aaron and I would be sitting there. We would finish a game and the kids would disperse like light hitting roaches. I mean, they would just run away from the table. And so what we realized was,
are you already in a Fortnite round?
Yeah. It's like we realized that they did not care who picked up the game or whose responsibility it was. They were out. So what we did was we said that the winner, and we did this for a couple months, the winner puts away the game and everybody who lost helps them, you know? So we have a person in charge. That person has to make sure it goes back on the shelf where it belongs, but the other people have to bag up the stuff. So it was it was almost like this, you have a responsibility whether you won or lost. Because we were seeing the kids, all three of the kids would get done playing the game and they would run every direction no matter who won.
Right.
And then Aaron and I are sitting there with a ton of pieces and we're like, oh, cool. I guess it's our job.
Yeah. Well, and people might say maybe we're being a little bit picky and like old board game misers, but I mean, you know, we did an episode not too long ago about, you know, how we're going out into the community and sharing our games, and it just makes financial sense for us to take some steps to protect our stuff. And if you've, you know, started to want to invite people over more often, especially people that have kids, these might be some things that you start to think about. And what is it, you know, I don't think sleeving, I'm never going to reach the level where I sleeve everything.
No way.
I think that's too much. But I do think there are certain things where it makes sense. And so be wise about it. Think about what you're going to do.
That's right.
Well, Ryan, we've got a quick little segment to finish up the show, and we'll be right into it right after this. All right, we're back. Ryan, you know, outside of Halloween, I think April Fool's Day might be your favorite holiday.
I enjoy it.
You seem really excited whenever April Fool's Day comes around. And one thing I like about April Fool's is all the announcements that companies and people make. This year, one of my favorites was Tom Brady saying he was going to retire. That was pretty fun.
Nice.
I had
a coworker, Amy, who said that in the as soon as she woke up, she saw somebody had recommended that they take their ice. You know, you have the ice dispenser inside the door of your refrigerator. So if you have one of those, take all the ice out, turn off the ice maker, and fill it with Skittles or fill it with jelly beans. And this way, when your kid goes to get ice, it just spits jelly beans. I need that for my life. I just like in general.
Right. Why just save that for one day a year? Well, one thing I saw this year was a few board game April Fool's Day pranks that I wanted to kind of talk about. I don't know if you saw Renegade Game Studios announcement. Did you see that one?
I did, the cereal. Yep.
Yeah, so Renegade Game Studios said they're releasing Renegade Game Studios,
yeah,
which is the name of their cereal. So gaming goodness in every bite.
That was pretty funny.
Talking about some oats and some marshmallows and stuff. My favorite line was the coming to your friendly local grocery store.
Nice.
I thought that was pretty funny.
We had another one, Card Lords, which is the one to Tucker Schmid, who the Pirate's Flag and also Battle Goats premiered, mm-hmm, Battle Oats, which is a cereal fighting game. I thought that was pretty funny.
That's awesome. Yeah, I saw, and I don't know that they're all that much of a gaming studio, but this Twitter feed called Download Festival said that they were releasing an all-black version of Twister.
Nice.
Where all the spots on the board were black and the, you know, little spinner was just covered in black circles. Not that funny, but, you know,
yeah,
creative,
yeah,
quirky.
One that Bob passed along to me was actually from last year. Bezier Games said that they were announcing New York Slice Legacy, and it included real slices of pizza in every box. So he said, did you see, he messaged me at work today. He was like, hey, did you see New York Slice Legacy? I was like, yeah, that was from last year. It's a pretty funny video.
That's awesome. Yeah. Another one that I saw from last year is, it actually came from Sony, where they announced PlayStation the board game. And the announcement's just really funny. It's like, ever wish your PS gaming experience was a little less digital and a whole lot more analog? With all non-animated graphics and zero AI,
yeah,
this will let you experience the mild thrills of moving game pieces across cardboard. A non-4K resolution game board, rule books, six of them, in fact, pens and paper to draw your own trophies, and intense local multiplayer action for up to four players.
That's funny.
I thought that was pretty funny.
So we actually, we targeted a game company, AEG, Alderac Entertainment Group. They are the makers of Space Base and Thunderstone Quest and a bunch of other games. And they actually did a Tiny Towns big version. They had it on Twitter, I believe. And that was pretty funny to see that show up on Twitter. A giant version of Tiny Towns, which is a game that is coming to stores very soon. And we actually, at One Board Family, ran a couple of our own, which were really, really well received. If you didn't listen to the last episode of Will It Game with Rob Davio, Rob was kind enough to jump onto the podcast and help us just do a little April Fool's episode of Will It Game. He jumped on and let us criticize his games relentlessly, and then allowed us to just make fun of him the entire episode,
yeah,
and then acted like he hung up on us. So that was a lot of,
yeah,
fun to record that.
Totally. Yeah, that was really enjoyable, and hopefully, if you haven't heard that, well, we've ruined the surprise a little bit, but you should definitely go check out that episode. I think you'll enjoy it. And then we've also got two articles that we publish. We've actually been doing this for 3 years now, publishing stuff at April Fool's that's like, you know, more, you know, silly and stuff.
Yeah.
This year we had Checkers the Dice Game. That was pretty solid.
Bob wrote a really good piece for that one. That was hilarious. And what's so funny is that people, when we posted it on Facebook, we actually posted in some board gaming groups on Facebook, and people have actually taken that idea, and now they are adding mechanics to Checkers the Dice Game, this fictitious game that Bob created and I photoshopped, and it was really funny. We actually had Jonathan Gilmore, an amazing designer, jump in and throw in his two cents, along with a bunch of other just people in the community and other people who read the article and thought it was hilarious.
That's so funny. Yeah. And then you wrote an article yourself, sir.
Yeah.
About your favorite genre, Roland Rights.
I love Roland Rights, and I wanted to scare some people, so I wrote an article about Roland Rights, that there is a lawsuit pending regarding Roland Rights. And Becky Henderson, the title of the article is Dozens of Publishers Involved in Lawsuit Over the Term Roland Right. So Becky Henderson, this fictitious person from Becky's Bowling Emporium in North Carolina, filed a class action lawsuit against different game companies about the concept of Roland Rights. She said that this fictitious person said that Roll and Wright's, the original Roll and Wright is bowling, and you can't take that term from her. And it's funny because when we posted it on our Facebook page, we had multiple people fall for it and say, crap, you got me. So that was really to get some people in the act there.
Yeah, and one, I haven't been able to contribute as much. You know, I did, you know, help out on the podcast, but my favorite that I've been a part of was when my brother helped me do a review of Solitaire. We did a video review of that for the channel like 2 years ago. And it's just so many stupid things that we did. Like he just started it with saying, hey, this is Rick with another board game review. It's like just straight off from the top. No, you're not me.
Yeah.
But
well,
just
I think at the end of the video, it says something along the lines of, this is a near perfect game because you don't need anybody else to play. I was like, this is great.
Yeah, it removes all the things that hold other board games back, like other people and stuff like that. Just ridiculous things like that. I just started texting him stuff like that, where I was saying the different things that he had said. He said another one.
Are you watching it right now?
No, I had texted him back and forth, and I was reading some of the lines, and I was reading them for the old text, but it was like, it has not been acceptable to play solitaire on your computer since Windows 95.
That's
doing
great.
So makes you no better than a third grader bored in his computer class.
Nice.
I thought that was really funny. But yeah, you know, hopefully you enjoyed some little harmless pranks over April Fool's Day, and we'll try to have some entertaining stuff that we post next year. But Ryan, you know, where should people go if they want to find out about that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So you can head over to oneboardfamily.com. Of course you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and, YouTube. And so, yeah, check out all of the different places that we are. We appreciate all your feedback. And honestly, one of the best things you can do for us is to tweet about the show or share this link, share a link with your friends, tell them, hey, subscribe to the One Board Podcast. We've got two shows in one feed, and hopefully you enjoy some of the content that we're putting out. So, yeah, that's about it. So, Rick, until next time, we'll see you at the table.
Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.